Hi guys, I'm Angela. My sober date's July 15th, 2019. My last sober date. I'm gonna wing this, so bear with me. I'm 30 years old. I grew up in Cleburne, Texas, and was born there. I didn't grow up there. I was born there. And then I grew up in Granbury, Texas, and kind of most of my life, but most of my teenage life, I kind of roamed around all over Texas because my dad was running from the law and I thought I had to stay with him. So I was going to go with him no matter where it was. And I ended up in some pretty crazy places before I was in my addiction. So I guess that was just the start of my craziness. But I'd say I kind of had a normal childhood, as normal, what I always thought was normal until I actually see what normal is now. My dad was an alcoholic, but that's normal to me, because I grew up with it forever. And my mom's never touched a drug or anything in her life. I'd never seen her drink or anything. I used to always try to get her to with me, like, "Mom, come on, you gotta do something before you ever go. I gotta have some kind of memories," and those were the kind of memories I thought I needed. But I have four brothers and three sisters, and I'm the baby. But it was so and so normal. My sisters weren't really a part of my life ever until I was a teenager. I didn't even really know they existed. They say they were around when I was a kid, but I don't remember. And my brothers, two of them were around my whole life. One of them is a really big part of my story, so you'll hear that. Other than that, like, my childhood part was, I don't remember. Like, I kind of have the thing to where in my life where I don't remember a lot of the good memories, but I can tell you every bad thing that's ever happened. But like, that's a thing I still work through today with counseling and through therapy to try to kind of break through those barrier walls that I built up, thinking that only bad things can happen now, because now I see that that's farthest from the truth. It's just what I allowed myself to believe because it's all I've seen for a while. My addiction was methamphetamines, and didn't really progress a lot for me. Like I said, I kind of had a normal childhood. I was really big into sports. I did cheerleading school and district, which is outside. Competitive cheer. I did that for 12 years, and that was my life for the longest. So I think with all the trauma and stuff I kind of faced as a child, I just pushed it into something other than my head, to where I could focus on something, so I didn't allow it to really mess with me. And once all that stopped is once I let it, like, oh wow, this isn't supposed to be happening. And so I was really big into all that cheer, softball, every sport but basketball, because I have two left hands and two left feet. I was awful. I tried though, but it didn't work out, and my parents have some very awful videos of me trying. That was just me, I think, trying to be like my brother because he's 7 foot tall and he was an all-star basketball player. But that's just one sport I could not for the life of me get down. But once I was I said through school, I did pretty good. I had graduated with a 4.2 GPA. I graduated a year early, and I kind of had my life set, except for my senior year. I got pregnant with my first son, who is now 14, and I lost the scholarship I had for cheerleading that I pretty much worked my whole life for. But it was have an abortion or go to college and do your cheer trial scholarship, and I didn't believe in abortion and it wasn't going to happen. So despite all the disappointment I was getting from family, I just didn't think that was going to be the right thing for me. So I chose to keep my son, and it sounds awful, but it's kind of where my life kind of started spiraling, like mental wise. I had throughout school, like I'd been like all the teenagers, oh yeah, I'll try it. I'd smoke weed. I'd tried pills. I mean, I overdosed when I was in sixth grade because I was with a friend. I don't even know what we took. We just, it was like a pharmacy and they're like, oh, well, take this. And we took it all, me and my little sister. And yeah, we ended up in the hospital that night and went home, went to bed and woke up and we couldn't speak or nothing. We were spinning around the table and couldn't even explain to my dad what had happened. And I was only in sixth grade and my, what I call my little sister was younger than me. So we ended up in the hospital with charcoal all in our mouth and very pissed off parents. And we couldn't tell them what happened. But then they found this tub, this little tube, this black tube thing that I had hidden in my closet thinking it was all kinds of pharmaceuticals, probably not even the good stuff. It was just, we were dumb and young and thought, oh, well, this will work and this will work. And it just ended very badly for us. So I guess that's kind of where I was more the follower and, oh, if they'll do it, I'll do it. And it never ended good for me. So in school, like I said, like I tried to just focus in on what I could do, and that was sports and schoolwork and stuff like that, and quit trying to be the cool kid because cool kids were getting in trouble and I'd end up in the hospital. So I wasn't cool enough, I guess, because I couldn't hang. And I did, like I said, though, my senior year, I got pregnant with my son. And I was only 16, so like, because I graduated early. And I decided to keep home and I moved back to my mom's because the disappointment in my dad was just a little too overwhelming. So I moved back to mom's and had my son, and he was only 3 pounds, 11 ounces, full term. Like my body was so little or whatever, and my body wasn't producing the nutrition he needed, so he wasn't growing, but he was healthy somehow. And took him home, tried to be the parent, but then I got in the thing of, I'm only this old, I need to do this, and I need to be doing this, and I kind of let that stage go out, and I hit a really bad spot of depression, and my brother had told me, like I had said, in high school, I'd, you know, dipped in and out of different stuff, and at one point, my brother had told me, remember how I told you, you make your own decisions, and that's the first time he'd ever held up a dope pipe to me, and I was like, what is that? And I kind of watched him do it, and I was more about looks and stuff, so I was like, oh, it spins, and I want to see, and, you know, kind of like I do with, like, the mini sodas, I see them, I'm like, oh, they're cute, that's how I was. I was, like, very easily influenced, and I was like, oh, yeah, I'll try it, but it wasn't really my thing, but I liked the way it made me feel at the same time, because it was the one time in my life I can remember that I didn't like overthink and I didn't really think at all. Like my mind stopped. And when I'm not on stuff, my mind's like going and going and going. And I think about every in and every which way this could go bad or every way it could work out, every way it won't. And that was what got me hooked. Once I started doing it after I hit that stage of depression, but to rewind a minute, because like I said, I didn't prepare for this. growing up, I had a lot of trauma. My brother, the one I told you about, who I did drugs with for the first time, raped me from the time I was 5 years old, six, 5 or 6, till I was about 12, going on 13, and realized what was going on wasn't normal. I was at a youth group at church because all my friends went, and I decided to go, and that's when they were, you know, teaching us about the ins and out and sex ed and things that shouldn't happen, things you should tell your parents about if this happens and stuff. And I'm sitting there like, wait a minute, what's going on? Like, what's happening? And that's kind of when I realized, like, holy shit, like my life isn't normal. All these games my brother's so-called playing, they aren't normal. The game that my uncle plays isn't normal. So everything that I thought was normal for all, most of the guys that were in my life growing up wasn't, because I was a kid and they were the adults and they were telling me this was okay, so it was okay. And I was kind of sheltered besides sports, so I wasn't around much people to tell me any different. And so once I realized like everything that was going on wasn't supposed to be happening, it messed me up and I dove further into sports. And my parents had, once CPS had got called and all that stuff, I was told, That's around the time my sister came back into our life, and she was a full-blown alcoholic and had all her problems on her own. And I just thought it was normal because she was like everybody else in our family, crazy. And they told me to tell CBS that my sister told me to say it, and it wasn't true. It never happened, or else I wouldn't have a family. Well, I was 13, so not having a family was scary because I can't take care of myself. Well, I didn't do anything wrong, but I got to the point where I kind of felt like I was. Well, this is my brother. How can I ruin his life? I'm going to be fine. I'm not dead. Nothing really happened to me. They don't seem to think it's a problem, so why should I? And then so I did what they said, and my brother didn't live back in the home for a while, but everything kind of fell apart family-wise. My dad had left my mom, not because of that, but just because of his own infidelities and stuff. But so my whole life was kind of crumbling around me. Like, everything I thought was normal. I thought I had the perfect family. I thought all this stuff was going on, and then it was, like, all crashing. My dad left. My mom was here. I didn't know what to do, and that's when I followed my dad after all the truth came out. But then my best friend's dad was doing the same thing my brother was doing. And I'd come clean to dad about school. And I never said I lied about that. I just didn't. Nothing really came up. I lost my best friend over it. But during the process of trying not to lose her and coming out, I just started going to her uncle's house, who then proceeded to I woke up, pulled off the side of the bed by him. And this is all within the ages of, like I said, 5 with my brother and 14. So I called the cops that time. Of course, I had to call my dad too, and my dad went to jail because, you know, another man's touching his daughter, because he was probably the only man in my life that didn't do it to me growing up. On that note, that was kind of the beginning of my trauma, and after I kind of realized it was all wasn't supposed to be happening, I didn't really know how to handle it, because, you know, I didn't have an escape. That was my family. I didn't just have somewhere else I could go stay, somewhere else where I could feel, you know, normal, because that was my family. I loved them. Despite whatever had happened, despite what they were saying, that's who I had, that's who I knew, and that's who I wanted to be with. But mentally, I wish I could have got away. I wish I would have had the escape. But I didn't, and I chose to ride it out. And after I'd done that with my brother the first time, it kind of became my escape, because I realized only way I can stand to be around him is when I'm high. And I started having to be around him a lot more. So that was my way. Like, my brother was doing it, I could do it, and I could pretend you were a normal person and you didn't do all the disgusting shit, because I didn't think about it when I was high. So it didn't bother me. And but then after stuff like throughout my life started happening, that was my escape to everything. Oh, I'll just get high and I won't think about it. Then it won't bother me. But like, my biggest thing is, like, I do, like, I have a big heart. Like, I'll help anybody, no matter what you've done to me, no matter how son I, like, I'll be there. But, and I don't think of how it's going to affect me in the end. So that was one of the hardest things for me to do. I had to stop letting my heart kind of control my life and realize that sometimes I have to think about me and what's going to be best. And if I do this, how am I going to, how is it going to, what's the outcome going to be? Like, yes, it's going to help this person, but how am I going to be in the end? Like, how is it going to help me? And it's not like going in everything. I want something to help me. I just have to think about my well-being. And for the longest, I didn't do that. And, crap, I lost my train of thought. but long story short, that was the basis of my addiction. And I kind of got a control on it growing up. After it started or whatever, I'd do it for a little bit, and then I wouldn't, and then I'd do it and I wouldn't. But in the process of doing it, my son that I gave up college for and all the other stuff, when he was 2 years old, I had to sign him over to my parents because CPS had got called while I was in Midland. And of course, he was at my dad's and them's anyways, but they got called and I was on one of my little sprees with friends because I thought I could still be young and party and do that stuff with them and be a mom, and I couldn't. And so when they got called, they wanted me to take a drug test, and I knew I couldn't, and I wasn't going to give them anything on paper against me. So I just told them, I said, how about this? I said, how about my parents just come get them? And little did I know that would backfire on me because I would never get them back. But I got them back for a little bit as I was with somebody that they thought was stable enough to take care of me because they didn't think I could ever take care of myself. And I got him back when he was four. I was in his life the whole time, but when he was four, he lived back with me. And once I realized I wasn't going to be happy where I was at and I didn't love the person I was with and it wasn't fair to him or me, I left. And as soon as I left, they still had papers and they took them. But when their papers came up, I went back and got them. But yet again, I hit a rough spot in life later and I couldn't take care of them, so I gave them back. And I still to this day don't have him. And that is by choice because he spent a lot of his life there. And I don't think it, I think it's selfish of me to just go yank him from somewhere he's comfortable, somewhere he loves, when I couldn't have been the parent. In the beginning, they were and they have been. And it's just a really difficult situation, something I had to pray long and hard about when it comes to that. But to the basis of that, when I was after I'd given him up, I had moved to Whitney, Texas, and I was running from the law because I was on probation, and I'd gotten in trouble being pulled over for a marijuana charge. I had marijuana, like a crumb of marijuana, in the door handle or something in the back seat, and I went to jail for it. My dad tried to defend me because he's like, I'm telling you right now, if you're going to find anything on my daughter, it is not going to be that. And it wasn't, but you know, cops don't care. They found it, so you're going to jail. I went to jail and did that. But in the process of all that, oh, wait, no, sorry, rewind. Rewind. After I'd lost my son, I had spiraled out and I was in a relationship with a guy and they were going through using credit cards and stolen credit cards and buying stuff. And we all had our own money. We all had our own cards. I knew they weren't saints, but I didn't know the extent of how bad they were. And I guess it was kind of thrilling to me because I was always attracted to the bad boys. It never works out, but, I ended up, my first offense was a credit card abuse charge because I wouldn't snitch on my boyfriend or his friends or anything like that because in my eyes, they were bad people. They were involved with bad people and I didn't want them to think I did anything. So just charge me with them is what I told the detective because they were going to let me go because I was cooperative because I didn't really know nothing to be cooperative about. But since I was so, you know, forthcoming and cooperative, they were going to let me go, but I refused to let them. And I was like, nope. I said, y'all aren't going to get me killed. That was my mind. Bad people were going to do stupid stuff and they were involved with drug dealers. So no telling what would happen to me up there in Midland, Texas. So I did that. He said, I'll charge you with the lowest thing I can charge you with. That was a felony. So not 2 hours later did they surround my house like I was some big criminal and I had weed. So I was like, I had to go get dressed because I wasn't dressed. So I put on the shorts that I had on the night before. Well, little did I forget, I had a weed in them. So I go into Midland County Jail with weed in my pocket. And when they go to search me, but they say I was cooperative. So they were doing, I said, I need to go to the back. And I was still, he said, you got anything in your pockets? I was like, no. And I was feeling it. And as soon as I felt it, I was like hoping my mind or my face didn't just say what I just felt because I was like, oh shit. So I was like, can I go to the bathroom real quick? And I went in there and I ate it. Because I didn't know what to do. I just knew I was going to get in more trouble and I didn't know what was going to happen because I'd never even been to jail before. I never even so much had a ticket and I was scared. But so I ate it and then I come back out and they're doing my booking and booking me in and I'm trying to ask questions and it all hits me and then I couldn't function. And she's like, are you all right? And I was like, yeah, I'm okay. Well, she ends up calling the hospital, the medic down there, because I just start, like, not seizures, but, like, I start getting really sick and delusional and all that stuff, and I didn't know anything. And she's like, she was perfectly competent, and then she went to the bathroom, and now she's not, and we don't know what's wrong with her. And I was like, I'm fine. But I wasn't. I knew something was wrong, and ran up to the net, and then they found out, you know, she has this much THC in her system. Something's wrong. And she's like, I was like, I don't. And I was like, hardly. I only did it when I needed to come down. So I had quite a bit in my pocket. But so that was a very bad experience for me. But I went into jail, and my mindset was I was never getting out. I was stuck. I wasn't going to get out. And I was, like I said, I was one of them that fit in with the crowd. So tried to. My dad's advice was to go in swinging on the biggest person in there, so they'll leave you alone. So when I go in, that's what I'm thinking in my head. And you say, I was never in a fight before. I run my mouth, but I'd never been in a fight at that moment. So I go in, I'm looking, I go in swinging on the biggest girl, and this jail is two stories. And she throws me right down those stairs, and it was awful. And but they thought I was some little cocky white girl is what they called me. All of them had like their, because they said your hair is hard to keep up with there. So I think I'm not gonna get out. I'm gonna be in there for a while. So what do? I kid you not, 3 hours later, the lady's coming in for me to sign my bond papers, and I was like, oh no, I gotta go out there like this. No, this is bad. This is really bad. So I walk out. My dad's like, what did you do? I was like, just leave me alone. You said to fit in, and this is what fitting in gets me. I didn't think you were getting me out. So that started that, and they put me on probation. They had me on an ankle monitor first for the bondsman, and I stayed on that for a few months until my stepmom literally suffocated me and beat me to a pulp because I wouldn't hit her back because she was drunk one night, and I broke my ankle monitor and ended up going back to my mom's. And they let me go, but I ended up getting 5 years deferred probation is what it's supposed to be. And I don't know. I know a lot of y'all probably know probation fees are a joke. I think probation is a lot of the time a setup for failure because I was 17. I couldn't pay those fines. I could pass the test and I could do all that, but I couldn't pay the fines, and not paying the fines got me 9 months state jail. Even though I'd never been in trouble and I was still doing everything else, I just couldn't pay those fees. So I went to prison after, like I said, after I let my parents take my son. And I got out and I was doing pretty good for a little bit until I got around an old crowd and I just kind of went back downhill and I couldn't really get it together. But so I ended up in Whitney, Texas. Running from the probation they let me when I got out. I was back on probation for that weed charge I got pulled over for. And I went to Whitney, and I was living there. And I stayed so messed up for the longest because I couldn't function thinking I was running from the law, and I didn't know how to. I just knew my dad did it, so I could do it. I watched him do it my whole, you know, teenage years, so couldn't have been that hard. But I was about 4 or 5 months into a really hard, I stayed gone. Like I said, I never really sobered up during that 4 or 5 months there. And so one day I couldn't do it anymore. Like, I was sick of getting high. I was sick of feeling this. I couldn't remember nothing. I just wanted to get sober for a day just so I could clear my head. And the guy I was with wasn't going to allow that. If he was high, you were high, and he stayed high. So I left in my truck after being up for about 3 weeks. And, I got around the corner and almost hit the telephone pole, but I was across the street from these apartments where a bunch of people were, and they kind of came over and helped me and took me over to their house, and they could already tell what was going on, but I kind of tried to explain what I could, and I just needed to sleep. I just needed somewhere I could sleep. And I went to sleep in that apartment. I didn't know the people. They seemed nice, but like I said, I was high. I don't have very good judgment. And I slept for 3 days straight. I don't remember nothing. I didn't, you know, I just know when I woke up, I was good to go. That's all I needed. I needed to sleep. And we all went to the bar because I was like, okay, let's go get drunk now. Let's go party. And we went to the bar and I met somebody else because I was staying on fence, relationship, get high, relationship. You had to be in a relationship if I was high. And I went there and I had actually found out after I was dating this guy for a little bit that the people I stayed with that night, one of them kind of told my boyfriend different things to do, different ways to get reactions out of me and all stuff. So I was like, I don't even know that guy. And so I confronted that guy on it. He goes, oh no, I've never said that. We've never done anything. About a month later, I found out I was pregnant. And after hearing that, I didn't know if it was the guy I was with or the guy that had done what he'd done to me that night. And I kept the pregnancy after that sobered me up. I found out actually when I was really high that I was pregnant because everybody kept, you need to take a test. I was like, no, I don't. And I did. And all the drugs I had on me, I flushed down the toilet in front of them when I found out I was pregnant. I was like, what'd you do that for? And I was like, well, if I'm not getting that, y'all aren't getting nothing. Get out of my house. Y'all ruined my eye. And I was mad. And I didn't know how to react. And I didn't know what to do because I couldn't raise a kid right now. I was running from the law. I was in the shape I was in, and I didn't understand how I could be pregnant because I was just in the hospital a couple weeks before, and they said I wasn't. But now the doctors tell me I'm like 3 or 4 months, and I didn't understand what was going on. So I sobered up, and I went home to my mom's, and I ended up having my daughter. And through all the state legalities, you have to have DNA tests and all that other stuff. Well, I didn't want to have a DNA test because I didn't want to know who her, sorry. I didn't want to know who her dad was, but I ended up doing it and testing it, and the guy I thought wasn't who I needed it to be wasn't. So it turned out that's who the rape was going to be, who my daughter's father was. So I didn't ever want her to know that. And trying to kind of live with that was how could I let myself get in a situation with that? But everyone's like, well, why'd you even keep her? Because once again, I was in a situation, I don't believe in abortion. I don't think it's an option for me. And I was going to love her regardless. But kind of like my life was, I'd do really good for a little bit, and then I just wouldn't. And I did pretty good for, like I said, 2 years, just like with my oldest son. Just like for some reason, that was the mark for me, 2 years, and I couldn't get past it. And I got into my thing where I was starting to get high again. And the first time CPS got called, I just got a warning, like kind of smack on the hand. I could live with her, but I had to do all these programs. I had to do all these classes, did everything they wanted me to, and they left me alone. But then again, they got called out when I was 2 years by my sister, when she was 2 years old by my sister. And I lost it because I couldn't come back from that one. And I had kind of let her down because I promised her when she was born, I wasn't going to let her go like I did my son. I was going to be the mom I knew I could be, because my whole life I was like so good with kids and I was doing all this great stuff, and then it was just gone. But I knew I could be a good mom because I was good with everybody else's kids, but I couldn't seem to get it right with my own. So, my brother was back in the picture, and, kind of lost myself for a minute, but because every time he was around, I thought I had to self-medicate. And I'd gone to MHMR, I'd done the therapies, I'd done classes like that. None of that stuff worked for me. Only thing I knew in my head worked to me was doing drugs. So that's what I would do if he was around. And every time I did it, my life kind of got worse and worse. And so the last time I did it, I'd lost her. By then I was with my husband. And we had actually met at Celebrate Recovery, a recovery group, because we were both sober at the moment. And, but I started using, so he started using, and we kind of lost ourselves. And, my daughter was gone, but once, like I said, CPS took her, I didn't come back from that for a while. I know for weeks on end, I stayed high. I stayed gone. I didn't care. Nobody could tell me any different. Y'all took the only reason I had to even try to stay sober or even want to. And that was my excuse. So y'all took her so I can get high now, rather than fight and try to get her back. So I did that, and more stuff had happened, and more trauma, and stuff I couldn't remember, and things I didn't really know. And I don't know, it took me probably about 8 months into the case to even try. And then I did, and then I did really good, and we were sober for a little over 9 months. But the only reason I started trying was because I was pregnant. And I was pregnant with another one. So I was like, okay, well, this is my other chance to do it right. And as soon as I had them, I didn't want to go to hospital and have them because I didn't trust it. But everybody's just, I was convinced by then, since I was doing so good and I was doing everything I was supposed to do, and I did all the stuff now, they weren't going to take them. And my husband didn't think they were going to take them, and nobody we were around thought they would. So when we got there, we were walking out of the hospital, getting ready to leave, and the nurse stopped us and asked us to wait in the room because CPS was on their way. And a little caseworker come in, and he was a really nice guy, and he didn't want to take them, but he had to confirm with the county I was living in, and they said to take them because there was an open case, and it didn't matter if his system was clean or mine was clean. It mattered that before I wasn't good, so they were going to take this one too. But I probably cried harder than I'd ever cried at that time. And I was angry and I went through my thing, but at that moment, like, I had that fight, and I did it. And once the CPS decided they were going to give them back, and I was finally, you know, where I needed to be, my sister decided to hire a lawyer and fight me for my kids. And I didn't understand what was going on, because y'all all did this and got CPS involved to help me. But now that I'm helped and got where I needed to be, you don't want to give my kids back. And it was her own thing she was going through. She doesn't have custody of any of her kids. She'd lost them back to her own problems from before. And she was able to redo her life and be a parent to my kids that she wasn't to hers. And eventually I've had to learn to accept that, because it's how it ended up being. Because after we fought for a while, I was like, I'm never going to get them back, because I don't have the money she has. And I lost faith, because I didn't have faith in a lot of the system, because I just seen how some of it worked. But, so I did what I did best, and, I relapsed. And as soon as I did it, like, I already knew I'd messed up. Like, what did I do? Why did I do this? I was doing good. They were on my side. And beat myself up about it, but wasn't going to do no good. And they were on my door the next day, ready to test me. They're like, oh, like, how can you do this? Like, you were doing good. They were, the day after that, after they left, and I realized they were going to take them, and there's no way around it. I got a letter in the mail saying my kids were coming home, and I'd messed it up. And I didn't know how to, I couldn't live with myself on that one. Like, I did it right. And because I couldn't have enough faith in myself for the fact that I could do it. I lost them both. So, my daughter's actually 8 now, and my son's 7. And, so like I said, I lost it for a minute, and then I got sick of doing it. And me and my husband both kind of had our spurts. We on and off. We lost everything after that. Like, we'd gotten so bad. Like, we sold everything in our house, everything, like knickknacks, everything my husband probably worked his whole life for, we sold to get dope. And so we lost our house. We didn't have anything to our name, and we moved in with his parents. And it was just on and off again. We'll get it and we'll sell it. We'll get it and we'll sell it. And for a few years, it was like that. It was just kind of on and off and off and on. And so we just kind of got tired. We'd gotten a house, or condo, and we were doing really good and sobered up. And we relapsed one night. Well, that one night, my husband almost died because he got some really bad stuff. And of course, I'd gotten the same stuff, but it was bad to him. And I had to take him to the hospital, but he's a man and he doesn't like doctors. So that was a chore in itself that I never want to experience again in my life, because I pulled in that hospital parking lot probably 4 or 5 times, and then I kept having to go back home because he wouldn't get out of the car. And I literally, I knew he was dying. He was throwing up the lining of his stomach. It was awful. And seeing that was pretty much done for both of us. But I had done some other stuff. Got involved with a bunch of different kind of people throughout it all. And he stayed sober since that day. But I had my spurts where I'd get around somebody and I wouldn't. And once I finally sobered up, I was sober about 3 years. And then I ended up taking care of my mom. And after my daughter, this daughter was born, after 10 miscarriages, I think, with my husband, we finally had a daughter. And 2 days after my daughter was born, my mom got diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. Well, I was her nurse. So I took care of her up until she passed, and that was a chore mentally for me. And after she passed, I stayed sober about 9 months, and I relapsed. And from then on out, I was kind of, I stayed sober another 9 months after I went to outpatient, because I downright refused to go to inpatient. I didn't need it. I had control. I just needed a little bit of help. And then shorten it up, because I've got a little bit of time left. I went to outpatient, and I just did what people wanted me to do. I said what they wanted me to say. And then after I relapsed the second time, I didn't have an option. I had to go to inpatient. That's how I ended up at Austin Recovery. That's how I ended up at Austin Recovery. And when I first got there, I was like, they want me here, I'll do it. Like, I want it, but I didn't think I needed it. So wanting it and not thinking I need it didn't mix. It had to be both. I had to be on the same page. And until I got out of treatment, after I tried to leave a couple times and was just over it, because I just was me and my way or no way. But I got out and was doing so good for 2 weeks, and I relapsed. And but that did, as soon as I relapsed, I'd already knew I'd messed up. And the next day, I was calling sober houses to get into them, because I didn't think I needed treatment. I knew exactly what I needed to do. I just wasn't putting anything I learned into it. So I went back to Austin, and I went to a Tranquility house where I met some of the best girls I probably have in my life. And I got a lot of support from them, and I've worked everything with my sponsor. And she is my biggest support. Like, when it comes, like, I met in Austin, I'm like, I can call her for anything. And if that's like the key to my sobriety, it's like she probably gets tired of hearing me from something, because I still call her. I'm over a year sober, and I talk to her almost at least 4 or 5 times a week when she answers, when she can, because she's busy just like me. But she's the biggest key to me. But until I realized that it couldn't be my way, and I did actually need it, and I actually had to put the stuff I learned to use rather than just thinking, skating by and nobody would see me, and realize I actually had a problem, nothing worked for me. And so I went to Austin Recovery and learned it. And then I had to get out and fall one more time, because I just didn't think it was enough. And that one time was what it took for me. And now I'm a year, so, little over a year and almost a month sober. And I'd lost my daughter in the process of all that. And an option of getting her back was not an option for me when I left to go to Austin. I was never going to get her back. They were going to take my rights, and they were going to do everything they could to do it. Well, back in March, I got my daughter back just out of the blue. They just decided they were going to drop everything that I'd done enough. And I didn't fight them. I didn't do nothing. I wasn't going to. I was just going to go up there, do what I thought I needed to do to make me better and not make it about anybody else. And that's what ended up working out. Me and my husband got our marriage back, because we had separated during it all. I'd lost everything when I relapsed after getting out of Austin Recovery. It was all gone. And now, when I actually finally took the time to focus on what I actually needed to fix about me that everybody was saying was wrong, but I didn't see, because I didn't think nothing was wrong. I had control over everything. That's when it all got better. Once I could actually start having time to focus on the things that were wrong and realizing, I didn't have it together, and I needed to put the stuff I learned to use. And once I kind of got out of it, self-centeredness, and it really worked out for me. Now I have, like I said, over a year sober. My daughter's back in my life. My marriage is better than it's ever been. We've probably got more now than we've ever had in our entire lives together. And we work hard. I got a good job. I've got a promotion. I'm on a salary job, and I've never had a salary job in my life. I don't necessarily like it. It's not the ideal job for me, but they think I'm good at it, and I get to be a boss. So apparently being a bitch is something I'm good at, because that's what everybody thinks their boss is. So, you know, it's ended up working out for me. But it took a lot of work and a lot of seeing stuff that I didn't want to see. And I still have to work on that stuff every day, because I'm not perfect. I'm never going to be, even if I want to be. But as long as I keep doing what I'm doing and doing the next right thing, then I know everything's going to work out. And like, it has been, it has to. And like my favorite saying, Miss Betsy, actually, she always showed me the wall on Austin Recovery, and Austin Recovery has all the quotes on it. And I was always marking them down. And my recovery has to come first. So everything I love doesn't come last. And since I've lived by that and I've actually put that first, everything else has fallen into place. So she was like a big part of how she made me see it. Cause she told me about those quotes. And once I started writing them down and focusing on them and believing them, everything's turned around. And I didn't, like, I had to do the work, but it really wasn't a lot of work. It was just opening my eyes and shutting up. So my story was really thin, but I wasn't prepared. I didn't have anything right out. So y'all got the rough draft. So thanks for letting me share, guys.
Thank you, Angela. That was awesome.
Thank you.
What a great time. Thank you, Angela.
Really awesome.
That was good.
Very
thanks, guys, for everything.